see the fun. I see the fun. The Diary of Jack Kirkman Podcast.
I Seem Fun, The Diary of Jen Kirkman Podcast, episode 261. Hi, everybody. Listen, folks, I don't know what's going on, but the Christmas show has stalled out in ticket sales. This is not a lie. This is not some Hallmark movie plot. This is the time when I get antsy because it means these are the people who like to make last-minute decisions. And look, there's plenty of tickets sold. It'd be a beautiful night. This is for charity, people. And also, we want it sold out. We cannot have the seventh year not be the sellout year. It's been sold out every year. Go to jenkirkman.com, click tour. Hollywood Improv, Thursday night, December 6th. It is, people are clamoring to get on this show. I am doing a sketch that I wrote. A friend of mine is in it. Another friend who's like an actor is in it. One of the comedians on the show, she's in it. Then there's three comedians. Three of them are women. One of them's a dude. Then my friend's coming into town who's going to tell you a funny story and sing two songs. That's right, two songs. Then I'm going to give away free merchandise to the audience. I'm going to do another sketch with my friend Chris Frangiola. I mean, people, this show is going to be, it's just, you thought last year was fun. This is going to be lunacy. And I'm wearing blue sequined high heel shoes. I mean, people, why are you going to miss this? You can't miss this. I would say at least half the proceeds are going to go to the LA Food Bank. I do it every year. And bring a children's book for the Barnes & Noble Children's Book Drive. Any age kid. And I'll personally take it. Put it in my suitcase. I mean, at the list of props I got to buy. It's just for this. It's just going to be fun and silly. And I'm like, I can't wait. I can't wait for this. This is my Christmas. This is going to be such a fun show, and everyone on it has such fucked up, dark comedy and stories, but not like in a way that'll leave you sad, but in a way that's like, yes, this is like enough of this saccharine Christmas shit. Let's get real. But it's going to be so much Christmas appreciation and love. It's off the charts. It's the most feel-good show of the year, and what I love about it is it's so feel-good, but you've never seen more honest comedy in your life and silly, silly, like meta kind of sketches. So, I mean, like, I can't wait. So I like get so excited to bring this show to you guys every year. It's like, I'm a little kid. Don't let me down. Please get tickets, get them in advance. But of course you can get them at the door that night unless we sell out in advance. But every year we have sold out at the door. Sometimes there's been little kerfuffles here and there, like, I want to get in. And we've made it work. But why, you know, if you have the money today, just fucking go. Just do it. Okay, so we got that going for us. Oh my God, the dates are rolling in. The dates are rolling in. Dallas is on sale. Why am I doing a comedy club when I could do a theater in one night and get the fuck out? I don't know. I just sometimes feel like getting into the club scene and just making sure I'm still funny to dudes in cowboy hats that come in and hate women. So let's do it. I'm at Dallas Hyenas Comedy Club. Actually, the owner is a fucking... like, I'm sure, listen, anytime I say something good about a man, he gets charged with something the next day. But this dude's been good to me. So, you know, there you go. And they're always like, you can totally come back. And they pay me a fair wage on par with what they pay men. So there you go. I mean, that's about as good as you can say about certain things these days. That's about as good as it gets. Hey, you know what? The dude's been nice to me, and I think I get a fair wage. Wow. I know. High praise. So, Hyenas Comedy Club in Dallas. I can't remember if it's March or February. It's on my website. I'm going to be back at the Arlington Draft House in Arlington, Virginia. It is one of my favorite places. I have gone to that club, and I've just not even done the material I've planned. I've just riffed for like an hour. It's the audiences are just, they're so cool and smart and fun, and I just love it there. And I love D.C. too. But I haven't visited Arlington, Virginia in like 3 years, and I've done D.C. the last 3 years. So giving some love to Arlington, Virginia. I know how close it is to D.C. You get your little butts over there. I'm not coming to D.C. proper. You cannot do two shows that close together in proximity and expect to sell well either one in the same year. So I pick Arlington, Virginia this year. Don't come to DC me, bitches. Okay. And Portland, Oregon. Instead of one night, I'm doing fucking five shows at the Helium Comedy Club in Portland. I love the Helium Comedy Club in Portland. I like the Helium chain. I'm so psyched they're letting me perform there because I canceled on Buffalo Helium last year. As you remember, one show I had to cancel because I lost my voice and I was sick with some kind of bird flu in my lungs. And I thought I was going to be, you know, put on a mild ban from the Heliums. So I wasn't. So let's celebrate. I'm telling you, I don't play clubs that I don't think you should support. I mean, there's a couple in there. But Helium Portland, one of them, that I'm like, please support. Come see me. All the shows that I do, I will be selling merch after. Except the late shows on some shows, I can't. Because it's midnight and I don't have a merch company that I go around with. And it's just, I'm sorry, but drunk people, men and women, they ruin it. So, and also I get tired. So if you definitely want me to like sell and sign some merch after shows, early shows are your best bet to get tickets for. If you don't care about merch, go to the late show. And the merch I'm selling is just books and download cards. Everything on my TeePublic website, from the Soul Trapped in a Body mugs to I Seem Fun shirts, all that stuff, that's made to order online only. There is no world where I travel with it because, again, they only make the product once you buy it. I don't like have a bunch in bulk. It would be insane. That's actually why I do the online store, so that I don't have to carry around merchandise. It's tough. It's tough to get the message out because people are like, oh, I wanted one of the I Seem Fun shirts. That's why I came to the show. I'm like, I don't know how much more clear I can make it. It's a website. Nobody listens. Nobody listens. Let's see. To new people, no, it's not always like this at the beginning. So Dallas, Phoenix, one night, February 2nd. Chicago, January 17th. All this is going on sale very soon. JenKirkman.com. Click tour. Sign up for the newsletter. You should be able to find out firsthand when tickets are on sale. Sometimes the clubs throw me a fast one, and they put it on sale before they tell me, which they're not supposed to do. I have final approval of everything, people. Very important. And they always get everything wrong. And I have to go, you put the wrong bio up. That's from 5 years ago. This picture, I don't want it. And they go, And I have 19 agents, assistants helping me. And it's still, I still, the clubs sometimes can't get it right. So, all right. So I think we said Phoenix, Chicago, Dallas, Arlington, Virginia, Portland. Those dates, most are on sale. And if not, the rest are coming. I'm going to be at the San Francisco Sketch Fest, doing a show with Janine Garofalo on January 11th. Now, the tickets are pricey, but dicey. I did not set the prices. I do not profit handsomely off this. I make a tenth of what I would make doing a one-nighter on my own. But sometimes it's fun to be, just like if it's an easy flight, I pop up. I'm part of a thing. I want to see Janine. We do the show. We go home. But it's this whole immersive experience. It's like a 3-hour thing at a speakeasy. The show isn't 3 hours, but there's other stuff for the audience to do. Me as the performer, I don't have to be there for 3 hours. So anyway, don't yell at me about that one, but that's on my website. That's more for rich bitches, I guess. Okay. Well, that's why I just did a show in San Francisco. So you saw me then. You saw me then. What else? Oh, go to iTunes, give it 5 stars. I'm part of the All Things Comedy Network. At I Seem Fun Podcast on Twitter. JenKirkman.com/podcast. Join the secret Facebook group. We should all get off Facebook anyway. But until then, blah, blah, blah. That's on Facebook.com/JenKirkman. And on the pinned tweet, on the pinned post, you can see how to join the secret group. Man, according to the secret Facebook group where you guys post things, I am stressed out. Not really. I don't mean stop posting it. But I am stressed out at the amount of live, laugh, love signage that's everywhere. I mean, we don't have room for shit. There's too many things on the planet. There's just stuff. I can't deal. Does anyone see one of those signs these days and go, oh my God, wait, I got to slow down. I just walked past the sign. It was live, yeah, laugh, love. Oh my God, I have never seen this. This is, I gotta, Gerald, have you seen this? Oh, he said, okay, Gerald, oh, Mr. Cool, Mr. Hip. Why don't you put one earring in if you're so hip, Gerald? Gerald says he's seen one of these live, laugh, love signs before. Well, I haven't. And I just bought it, and I'm putting it on the table here, and I'm opening it up. And it is so cute because, well, yes, I am putting it. I don't know yet, Gerald. I will call the handyman to put it up. If I know you have, oh, yes, I will tell him to put the protector around. Yes, I know not just hammer nail. I know to use the screwdriver and put the little plastic thingies around the screws. Oh my God, you think men think women are stupid because they're stupid. See, they can't see outside their own reality. Gerald, I'm doing the podcast. I finally told you guys, he knows what a podcast is now. I told him, you know, it's not, he knows it's not the radio, but anyway, I saw this sign. I said, I have to get this. I got two of them because Gerald, they were 150% off. So that's, I got two, but it's cheaper than getting two. I got two for the price of 1.5. So technically, oh, forget it. Who can explain sales to men? He says it would be cheaper if I just got one. I said, but I don't want just one. I want two. So I get two at the price of 1.5. He doesn't. Okay. So I get the signs. I said, I can't decide if I want to look at, like, I think it'd be fun to have one in the guest bathroom. So they go and they go, oh, you know, because I want to put one in the bedroom, but you don't always have guests go in the bedroom. I mean, you do when they put the coats in at the winter, but if you don't have people over in the winter, you know, I'm not going to let them into the bedroom. They'll snoop around. You know, they snoop, people snoop. I mean, I do. When I go to people's homes, if they don't have a guest bathroom and we're just using their bathroom, I open the medicine cabinet. I want to know. Not to judge. I do it, to be honest, to feel like I'm okay. I go, oh, they take that prescription, then I'm okay. I have estrogen problems too. I'm okay. Gerald does not. He says to me, why don't you just use their toothbrush too? I go, Gerald, I'm not using their things. I'm looking at them. Anyway, so I would live, laugh, love is such good advice for the bedroom, girls. Gerald, yes, laughter is a very important part of lovemaking, Gerald. As you get older, Gerald, that's all we have is I don't have a hot body. I don't know how much love, you know, how much love. I don't feel like fireworks. Sometimes it, you know, living, how much more living are we going to do? We don't know, you know, but laugh. We can laugh. You say, look at this, Gerald. Remember when this body part used to be up here? Well, now it's down here. We laugh. Girls, you don't have to laugh at yourselves yet because you're young, but you'll want, someday you'll want to employ humor in the bedroom to distract from the things that have succumbed to gravity. Okay? So just a tip for me for the future. So I have a live, laugh, love. I'm going to put it in the bedroom. The handyman is coming tomorrow when Gerald is on his walk because he will supervise the hand. Bye, honey. He's going on his walk now. Okay. Will you bring back a gelato, the real baby cup, not the small, but baby cup? No, Gerald, you don't have to have a child with you to get that size. They're not, it's not a bottle of wine. You're going to show ID that it just, it means it's good for children. But also I have a child at heart waiting for me at home. That's what you say. She lives, she laughs, she loves. Just get the gelato, whatever the most chocolatey flavor is, but don't overdo it. Don't go up a size. I want the child size. You know, it's very European, Gerald, to not eat a lot of dessert. That's how they eat dessert. They stay skinny. I'm reading a book called How the French Figured out fats. And that's what the French do, is they eat fats, but then they take a walk and they eat a small, they have the French, they take a cube of cheese and they cut it in half and that's their breakfast. And they eat all the cheese before noon. So the body burns it off the rest of the day. So anyway, that's what they do. That's what they do. So I have the handyman come in tomorrow morning. Gerald will be on his walk. He alternates. So today the walk is at the end of the day. Tomorrow he walks in the morning. That's what he does. So the handyman will come. So he will not be soup. I don't know why I'm whispering. I live in terror. I tell you, I live in terror of my husband catching me talking about him. I know I talk certain things. I can talk about him in front of him. He thinks it's funny. Other things, like this handyman, he's very sensitive. So I'm terrified he's going to hear me. Even though he's left the house, he could be listening. Because the handyman is a looker. He's a widow. He's a looker. He's 10 years younger than me. But I have heard he likes older women. So, you know, I schedule him for when, you know, I'm not a nun here. I'm not a cheat, but I'm not a nun either. You know, I like to look. I like to look. So I bought two signs so he's here a little bit longer. Two for the price of one. There we go. Okay. Oh, guys, sorry. That was Mimi and Gerald. I don't know why Mimi's podcast sometimes like interferes with this one and I never edit it out. I hope you guys don't mind. That was just some of Mimi's podcast. No, there is no book called How the French Figured Out Fats, in case you're like, should I read that? But you know, like every book about French people, it's basically just like, they're better than you. They figured it out. You can't, don't even try to moderate like a French person. It's not a thing. Oh my God, Time Magazine picked up one of my tweets. Let's see, because Melania Trump unveiled the 2018 White House Christmas decorations on Monday. And first of all, everybody was like, it's so gaudy looking. There's too many decorations. And I'm like, oh, I'm so like, I don't know from that because I'm so into Christmas decorations that I'm like, oh, is it? I don't know. But she wrote, the people's house at the White House is ready to celebrate Christmas and the holiday season. And I was like, wait a minute, you can't say holiday season, not when your husband is like, I brought back saying Merry Christmas, a thing that never was. I have a Christmas card from the Obamas, not to brag. And it says Merry Christmas. Nowhere does it say Happy Holidays. I think I'm too lazy to go look, but I do remember it said Merry Christmas. Why did they send me one? Because this one year Chelsea made us all, well, she didn't make us, but we wanted to see Michelle Obama speak. And you had to donate a certain amount. And once you donate that amount, you get on the Christmas card list. I mean, it's not you. If someone said to me, wow, what do you have to donate to get on the Christmas card list? I'd be like 10 grand or more. It's not 10 grand or more. So anyway, so she wrote that tweet and I wrote code red. She said holiday season. And then she sent out another tweet saying the White House is sparkling for the Christmas season. So I feel like she saw my tweet where I was like, hey girl, you said holiday season and not Christmas. Anyway, Time Magazine did a collection of tweets. But whatever. Look, good. Look, you know what? I'm so rude. I'm so rude to these newspapers. Whenever they're like, Bernie should run again because he's the greatest and he's running. And I'm always like, fuck yourself. And they still print my tweets. So win-win. Oh, God. What do I want to talk about? Nothing. Sometimes I'm just like, why do I have to talk? And you're probably like, yeah, why? You don't have to. Can you believe George Michael died on Christmas? Like, just fuck you, life. Like, you're trying to wear us all down with that bullshit? Well, you're doing a good job. All right. Let me say something, and this is going to sound really bad, but I think I'm always very honest with you guys. I want to show you the realities of the career I'm in, the business I'm in. Most people in show business are not famous. And how do I define fame? I would say I define fame when you have millions of people on your email list is one definition. Obviously, you can be famous without being rich, but if you're actually getting paid to do your art and you have sold out shows at 10,000 seat theaters or Madison Square Garden, you're probably going to be rich. You know, fame, you're usually famous if you're making 600 grand, 100 grand every show, or a million, you know. It means you have such an abundance of fans that you don't really have to, like, some people are so famous, they don't even have to be on social media. You know what I mean? Like, and people will still sell out their shows. So I'm not famous like that. Now, it's not bad. I haven't failed. To be honest, the goal is if I could charge $1,000 a ticket, then I wouldn't care if 300 people showed up. Do you know what I mean? Like, to me, it doesn't matter if there's 300 people there, 3,000. I just want what we all want, which is financial security, right? I want to, like, if I don't feel like working for a year, I don't have to because I have millions in the bank or whatever, you know, or I buy a house for a family member, like some, like, just, I want, like, those dreams are just like, oh, that'd be nice, wouldn't it? Now, I'm just trying to, at a certain point, at a certain age, you go, well, you know, those dreams are great, but I've been working in this business for 22 years. I'm not anticipating that anymore. That can never become the goal, especially at my age. It's like, well, you know, it's not going to happen. But, and of course, anything could happen. But what you want is to be steadily employed, doing at least as good as you did the year before, if not better. And, you know, I could be employed doing a million things. And I do a million things because you never know eventually. You might have to transition just to doing one thing, like, oh, I should just be a writer now because I don't like going on the road, or I should just be on the road, whatever it is. But I do everything. I write, I'm on the road, I act a little, I do it all. I'm trying to let you into the realities of it because I know a lot of people listening want to be in this business, and I want to show them that 98% of the people working in it are working class, upper middle class. Who are the people that aren't the millionaires? They're me. They're me and people doing less good as me, you know, and people doing a little better than me, and but you know, whatever. And it's moves all around, you know. So your position constantly changes so that you can't worry about that stuff. Like, I literally never. Okay, so I think that you guys maybe don't, some of you, with all of the peace and love, maybe are taking it too much to heart when I say, make me famous like Ali Wong, sell out my shows. All I'm asking you to do is, if you're a person who has sat on their couch every year that I've come to your town because you would rather watch me on TV, all I'm asking you to do is take a chance and come see me live if you have 20 to 30 bucks. That's all I'm asking. And I think, ooh, wouldn't that be great if 1,000 people en masse decided that in one city? I'm not asking you guys to get your friends to be into me, to help my career. Oh my God, I'm so horrified at some of the emails I've been getting. So I have to have a talk with you guys about setting boundaries. I know you think you're helping, but it's kind of insulting when you send me emails with pitches. This one girl emailed me, God bless you, you're so sweet. She was like, it was a frantic email. I had somehow missed another email she sent. So that what I gathered from this email was like, Jen, I'm so sorry. My friend cannot come to your Christmas show. She's a giant producer. She works with a lot of famous people. I really want her to see you so she can, she didn't say make you famous, but it was within that vein of like a star is born, like this producer is going to, I was like, oh no. Guys, I'm with CAA agency and like a big management company, and I have like 75 reps. I am friends with like all the casting people. Networks are like, I hope we're getting a Jen pitch this year. Like, I'm in the business and I'm pretty well situated. It could be better, of course, but that's nothing you guys can help me with. That all you guys can do is like, just go see live comedy. That's like literally all I'm asking. Or like, if you have the urge to buy me a gift at a show, save it and buy my book. You know what I mean? Like, just give your money to the art I make, because that's how you help. Is like, if everybody buys my book, then the book company goes, oh, we'll give you another because it sold well. If nobody buys it, the book company doesn't want it. They don't care how funny I am or how cute I look or how many followers I have. It's over. So, you know what I mean? That's all I'm asking. Comedy is not like, here's what's getting me famous, possibly. Here's what's making me an overnight sensation, possibly, if you guys want to believe that for me. I have two Netflix specials that live worldwide. They're just sitting there right now. If Oprah watches it and tweets or tells everyone, hey, watch this, and everyone watches it and falls in love with it, but that's it. We done here. We good. You guys can't make that happen. So here's one of my Christmas show, as much as I love it, is not my stand-up. It's this other crazy variety thing that I have access to top producers and people who can make or break a career. And it doesn't happen the way you think it does. It's a long, steady process of working with someone. But I could invite them, but they're not invited to this show because this is my fun last show of the year, silly time with my friends show. Like, this is not a show that showcases anything that I do seriously for a living. It is the last place I would want any fancy important people to come. So like, you guys don't have to worry about taking. And then this one guy, very sweet, but he heard that the BBC didn't pick up my show and he pitched me an idea. And it's like, dude, you cannot, I would never take an idea from a listener. Like, you have to believe that I'm better at my job than that. And I hope that's not rude. But his idea was like, you could be a comedian. I don't want to do a show where I'm a comedian. That is an overplayed thing. And no one's looking for that. And that's not how pitching works. Pitches take months to develop. And you do it with your team of producers and all these people. And it's intricate. And you have to pitch 10 years down the line of like episodes. Like, it's huge. And you go into a network and you pitch and they buy that script. And then you spend 3 months writing that script. If they don't buy that script, you don't then go, how about this idea? How about that? That relationship is over for the moment. If you want to re-pitch them, then you go back into development for 2 months with your people. But it's a game. You don't do it right away. You take it elsewhere and then you redevelop. You come back with a new attitude, a new act, a new persona, you know? It's just not how that works. And so I know you guys are being nice, but it hurts my feelings. And this is my issue when I get those emails, because I think, oh my God, my listeners feel bad for me and they actually think they might have the solution. Like, if I was that lame, like, I just shouldn't be in the, do you know what I mean? I know this is going to sound rude and half the listeners are going to turn off and be like, fuck you, I was just trying to be nice. What I'm trying to do is like, I know you were trying to be nice, and anyone who's thought of doing something like this, let me explain how it lands and what the reality is on the other side. I'm just being honest and self-deprecating on this podcast, and we all, I think, have to be a little less codependent with me. I think we all have to be, just allow me the dignity of believing that I do have a career. I'm just being honest with you about how hard it is to actually get something on the air. When you guys are like, you should have a show about this. It's like, yeah, I know. I think so too. But I'm showing you guys the development process. Like, do you know what I mean? But I won't do that if it's going to prompt like all these pity emails that I get. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm going to have to cut back on the honesty because it's backfiring, to be honest. And so maybe I've gone too far with the jokes and the self-deprecation and the look inside the business. But I could just be like, oh, whatever with these emails. But there's just a lot of them. And I'm like, oh, I must be communicating this incorrectly if people are taking it this seriously. I have to be able to be honest. Like, I have been listening to Howard Stern for over 20 years. Like, my whole personality is informed by listening to him. You know, getting on stage for the first time and imitating my parents, that must have come from Howard. I mean, I always imitated my parents since even before I knew about his show. Since I was a little kid, I would run around the house imitating them to their face. But the thought that it would ever be entertaining to anyone else is like, I learned that from Howard, you know, and his honesty about his therapy. And he goes 4 times a week and, you know, what he wants to do with his career and what he doesn't. And I just take him as such an authority on his own life that I don't think I have any like words of wisdom to offer him, you know, or like I want to help him. I want to relax knowing that like someone who I perceive to be like has it all, like is still a human. And I'm not the figure that you guys think has it all, that I don't want that. But could you give me a little more credit, I guess is what I'm saying. And I know that this is a really personal podcast and I draw you into my life, but if you don't do what I do for a living, I would never take your advice. And I know that sounds awful, but that's just not how it works. I barely take the advice of people I am in the business of. Now, different things that are consumer-based where it's like, hey, what ticket price is just way too high? Where does it become offensive? You know, weigh in. Or what kind of merchandise would you, you know, would you wear a shirt that says fuck you or is that too controversial? Would you, and that's not really a question, would you like my opening acts to do longer material, you know, like, yeah, like audience survey kind of things. But in terms of like trying to help me, oh God, if I need help, I will get it from the people within my own circle of the business. Now, again, I've asked for help. I think it's just been misconstrued. So I know that this probably sounds really obnoxious and you all hate me. And hopefully anyone listening understands what I mean. Oh, God. Oh, God. Probably put my foot in my mouth. Well, here's something that I won't, that I will put in my mouth. Is my Quip toothbrush. You guys. There's a buzzy gift on everyone's list this year. It's something that they will use twice every day. It was featured on Oprah's O List, and it's perfect for everyone with a mouth. This is it. It's an it gift. Quip, an electric toothbrush designed to make brushing better. You probably don't think of an electric toothbrush as the perfect gift, but it's one of the most gift-guided gifts of the holiday season, and here's why. It's like you're giving a gift for the rest of the year. Because it's a subscription-based thing. So when you give Quip, you are giving someone the gift that keeps refreshing with brush heads that automatically are delivered on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5. You can even gift your prepaid refills for a year. That's cool. That's like a baller move. Like, oh, thanks for the toothbrush, but now I have to pay for the subscription brush heads that come, you know, for $5 every 3 months. Oh, no, I got that. That's how I do. It doesn't require a big clunky charger. It runs for 3 months on one charge. By the way, I realized that the other day. I was like, when is this going to stop running? It makes your holiday travels clean and easy. There's a multi-use cover. It mounts to mirrors and then it unmounts to, can I speak? It unmounts to slide over the bristles for on-the-go brushing. It's Sensonic. Guys, I literally like, my brain is mush. Sensitive sonic vibrations, gentle enough on your sensitive gums, and a built-in timer with guiding pulses to remind you when to switch sides. Also, Quip makes its own toothpaste. It's minty fresh. It's one of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the ADA. It's an amazing gift because you never think to buy something like that for yourself, you know, and it's cool. And you'll look like you're up on things. And again, that baller move of like, and I got you the subscription for the year. No big. Go to getquip.com/fun right now and get your first refill pack for free with a Quip electric toothbrush. But don't tell your giftie that. getquip.com/fun. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/fun. Quip looks like a big ticket tech gift with a stocking stuffer price. Okay, guys, so I've been wearing my Everlane clothes, and I'm wearing, oh my God, I love it. Okay. Why would you buy a t-shirt for $50 if you knew it only cost $7 to make? You wouldn't. With Everlane, you never overpay for quality clothes. This is men and women. Everlane.com/fun. Plus, you'll get free shipping on your first order. Everlane.com/fun. That's Everlane.com/fun. So I've got the day heel, and I have a bunion on my foot, and this is the most comfortable. It looks like a ballet flat, but it has a little bit of a heel, and it's in this sort of tan color. It's super cool and funky looking. I've got this really cool, like almost rusty colored boot color, like those like kind of beetle looking boots. And I've got cashmere sweaters, cashmere cardigan. Oh my God, it's great. Men, they've got a cashmere crew, 100% human tee, a twill weekender bag, a slim fit jean, straight fit denim, men's Japanese Oxford shoes. They have so many clothes. And they want to know what you're, they want you to know what you're paying for and why. They're radically transparent about every step in their process. They only make premium essentials in your wardrobe. They used to be called basics, but these are essentials without traditional markups. And they tell you their real costs so you know that you're never overpaying. Essentials like their cotton crew t-shirt are exactly what it should be, simple, stylish. They sell directly to you. Their prices are 30 to 50% lower than traditional retailers. And right now, you can get our personalized collection at everlane.com/fun plus free shipping on your first order. Heels can be comfortable. The stuff's not going to fall apart. And they've got timeless styles using only the finest materials. You will never have a bad outfit day. Awesome. Awesome. All right. I wanted to read this article, and I'm not sure which one I want to work. Oh, so Alex Trebek. Remember a few episodes ago, I was talking about how my mother was like, Alex Trebek thinks he's better than everyone. And I was like, is he a bad guy? And Mr. Trebek has just shown what kind of man he is. A scary time for men. He talks about the politics of Me Too. Now look, Me Too movement, certain things like the Aziz Ansari article to me is not our business. I think what's interesting about it is that he's called himself a feminist on Letterman and he's written a book about relationships and he's a little tone deaf in his own life, not knowing how to read a woman's physical signals. And these are gender issues that we can work out in societally somehow, but I don't think we're mature enough as a society for a woman to write an op-ed about a date with Aziz and his weird sexual comings and goings without people going, hey, you trying to take his career away? I think she was just trying to say, you know, men need to learn a little bit more about women. And I think that's it. And men need to learn a little bit more about what goes on in our heads when we're in a situation that makes us uncomfortable, but we know that the person is a good person, so we know they're not trying to hurt us, and that's why we don't just get up and leave, because we want the thing to work out. And we're just like, wait, what is happening? And then we don't really process until later. So does stuff like that hurt the cause of the actual victims of violent sexual assaults? I can't say. I can say it only does because of the maturity of the readers who go, well, that's not the same as that, so fuck the whole thing. That's, you know, are men falsely accused of sexual assault? Sure. In numbers nowhere near the amount of women who have been sexually harassed and assaulted, however. So right now, sorry, dudes, the numbers aren't on your side for how bad that epidemic is. It's not even. So unless you're a baby man, as Schwarzenegger would say. Or no, he didn't say that. Dana Carvey as a Schwarzenegger type character. But unless you are a baby man, or girly man, but we don't say girl as an insult. I say baby as an insult. Unless you are a baby man, don't be afraid of a movement that no one's even fucking called you out on. See, anyone who's afraid of it is like, wait, I've secretly done something and I'm afraid. I've done stuff that if I were a dude, people would be like, excuse me. So I'm just saying, like, that's your own shit. Deal with your own shit. Don't try to criticize an entire movement. If you're unsure in the past, if you've maybe been a little sexist, a little gropey, a little whatever, own it. You don't have to go to jail or lose your job, but just be like, oh, wow, I'm going to do better. But don't be like, this whole movement's getting out of hand. It's like, no, it's really not. Even Howard Stern said, how dare we make men accountable for rape? Like, how dare we scare men into not raping women anymore? I mean, he was obviously in support of the Me Too movement. So, a scary time for men. Alex Trebek talks Me Too politics and the kind of Jeopardy player that bothers him. The fact that he can just like seg into those two things, like they're the same. Well, that's the right. It's a this is the Washington Post. It's a well-documented fact that Alex Trebek can talk at length about almost anything. Things were no different when the longtime Jeopardy host spoke with Vulture writer David Marchese, for a piece that appeared to be about the 78-year-old's much-discussed retirement plans. But in reality, it was at times a bizarre interview that went far beyond a discussion of his experience as the beloved host of one of TV's longest-running trivia game shows. The Q&A, which Vulture noted had been edited and condensed from two conversations, was published Monday and pinballed erratically between a number of topics. Trebek commented on the Me Too era. Quote, this has got to be a scary time for men, he said. And his dream Jeopardy contestant used to be Kevin Spacey, but quote, now you can't say that. Boo-hoo-hoo. I'm boo-hooing in my boo-hoo-mobile, because I think Kevin Spacey will be the dream Jeopardy contestant, but he sexually assaulted a lot of young men, so I guess I can't say that anymore. And if I can't say that, then I don't have any happiness in my life. I'm in my boo-hoo-mobile. I mean, men, is you that weak? Are you that weak, really? Ask yourselves. And if you are, why are you running the world? Why do you think you're good at that? What's happening? What are you doing, guys? Don't be babies. Don't be babies. Be big, strong men. Come on, you can do it. Be as strong as women. We ain't afraid of no hashtag, is what I'm saying. Oh, he doesn't like when contestants bounce around the board. Oh, shut up. Okay, so he says, yes, I have all the answers in front of me. I'm good around the house. I'm pretty handy. I fix things. Then Trebek proceeded to surprise many of the people reading the interview by giving an unsolicited and generally unpopular opinion on hashtag Me Too. You know, when the Me Too movement started, I had discussions with the staff during production meetings, he said. I said, my gosh, this has got to be a scary time for men. Bitch, you crazy? That's all you can think of when hundreds of years of women are telling you every single goddamn day of their life from most of the men they've ever met, this happens, whew, and you think it's scary for men? It's you crazy. The Canadian-American continued, I'm fortunate that I've never been in a position of power where I might be able to lord it over somebody sexually. You're in one right now, you lunatic. You're the host of the most popular game show in history. You're famous. That's power, bitch. But there are guys out there, young guys, are stupid in their teens. There's nothing stupider than a teenage boy. They're operating on testosterone. Oh, really? What about David Hogg from Parkville? Is he just so testosteroned up? He had to leave lead an entire youth movement of voting NRA-loving GOP politicians out of office. Woo! Now, I know a lot of teenage boys, and I knew a lot of teenage boys. They weren't rapists. Don't equate being a stupid teenage boy with being a rapist. You could say maybe they're not studying as hard as they should be because they got all the hormones and they want to be kissing and hugging. But this is ridiculous. It gives an okay to men to act that way. It makes men who don't act that way feel like they're outside of what is considered masculine. Don't even get me started on not everyone likes women who's a man. You creep. You stupid old creep. Just everyone over 70, stop interviewing them. That is ageist, and I don't mean that. But, you know, I'm so surprised, and a white man over 70 thought that way. Stop being surprised. Oh, I think this episode is controversial. You yell at us for giving you ideas, and then you say old people. When the reporter responded that youth isn't always an acceptable excuse. Actually, it's never one, so let's get that out of your heads right now. And that young men are not the only ones with the problem, Trebek launched into an explanation of a scene from the 94 film Disclosure starring Demi Moore and Michael Douglas. This conversation has taken a turn, the interviewer said. You took a turn, Trebek shot back. You took a turn. He didn't say it twice, but I did. You took a turn. You took a turn. I'm trying to do his voice. I can't. I cannot. He said, we're in the Me Too movement now. It's the year of the woman, so I suspect that the producers might give serious consideration to having a woman host. She'll obviously be younger. She'll have to be personable, bright, have a sense of humor. Oh, like your sense of humor? Oh, God. You can't say that. Well, there you go. There he is. You know, we could probably educate him. I don't know how much of it he'd get. I bet we could get him to like 15% smarter about it. But it's always surprising where men have blind spots and it's just like, oh, forget it. Oh, forget it. We're moving on. We're moving on, dudes. You don't get it? We're moving on. I got my gang of dudes. They get it. I got my fans that get it. Everyone else, we're moving on. We're evolving. Bye. Bye, bitches. What do you guys think about drinking on planes? I guess we could talk about this. You could email me, iseemfun@gmail.com. It was an article about people who judge people who drink on planes. Now, I personally... here's when I drink on a plane. Let's say I have a feeling I might get a little anxious on a plane. I don't drink because it's sugary and it dehydrates. And all those sensations of being dehydrated and being a little sugar-nated can simulate a panic attack. They can feel like the beginning of a panic attack. And so drinking on a plane is like actually not great for you. You lose so much water flying and you're going to be bloated and I'm just too vain. But when I'm flying long, really long distance or international, if I'm in first class and they come by, I'm like, I'll have a mimosa. It's like celebratory. Or if I'm kicking off a vacation, although I'm very concerned with the immune system. So a lot of times, no. So, you know, or a lot of times it just dries out my voice. So I'm not a drinker on planes. But you might see me have a mimosa, absolutely. But like wine on the plane with my food, I don't know, I just don't get it. It doesn't appeal to me for some reason. But yeah, there's been like morning mimosas that have certainly been fun. And so this article is called Don't Judge People Who Drink on Planes in the Morning. It's from an article on myrecipes.com. I do kind of judge people like when it's super early, like 6 a.m. and they're like, Bloody Mary? I'm like, maybe they're trying to like pass out and go right to sleep and the plane takes off. So like I kind of get that in a way. It's just that alcohol has never made me sleepy. So it's just like either neutral or I can be really hyper when I drink. So maybe I just don't understand their body chemistry. Like maybe to them it's like taking a Benadryl or the way I would take like a half a Klonopin. So yeah, it's like – or some people are fearful flyers and they want a little something to take the edge off. But it does always look weird because – if you ordered a Bloody Mary at like 6 in the morning, there's outside of a plane, it's like weird. But I think that's what can be fun about it is like I'm in no man's land of rules, you know, for the most part. Yeah, so this article written by Kat Kinsman, senior food and drinks editor at Extra Crispy. I don't know what that is, but so she or he writes, a few months ago, I boarded a Crack of Dawn flight from New York to Portland, Oregon. Wedged myself into a window seat. This woman came in and sat in the middle seat. She was super bummed. because she was, wanted the middle seat to be empty. But as we were in economy comfort, we were all entitled to a free adult beverage. I opted for coffee because I was hoping to get some work done. And my seatmate, a very put-together woman in her mid-60s, ordered a double gin and tonic, and then another, and another, and another, and then a beer. Soon enough, she was giggling hysterically at fever pitch on the seat back screen. I don't like when people drink too much because I can smell it coming off your breath and your pores. And I hate when, like, hungover people get on planes and you can tell they haven't showered yet. And I'm like, I smell the whiskey coming out of your body. This woman could just be an alcoholic and she drinks on planes. But was there cause for side eye? I kind of think so. About her cinematic predilections, possibly, but on the early morning tippling, no, it was offered and someone else was doing the driving, so why abstain? I don't know, because what do you do when you get off the flight? Now you're just like a drunk mess. Yesterday, author and journalist Katie Turr tweeted about a fellow passenger who'd made a similar decision, writing, "Some dude just ordered a gin and tonic on my flight back to New York City at 7:17 a.m. Yeah, Turr's being a little bit judgmental there. It's not that weird to have a drink. But a lot of people on Twitter were like, you're being judgy and saying it's 5 o'clock somewhere. That's fun. But the people delivered a ruling over Twitter that on an airplane and in airport bars, time is moot, drink up. In an airport, you rarely know where someone's been, where they're ending up, what's taking them there, or what time it is in their psyche or circadian rhythm. Right, like he could be on his way to a funeral, you don't fucking know. People travel for pleasure, business, obligations, curiosity, grief. And some of them, it brings out the joie de vivre or the boredom or the terror, and a drink may quell or amplify that. Sometimes it's just nice to have a drink. A person is rarely in less control of their surroundings than when they're on a plane. So sometimes work can be accomplished, but for most, it's an extremely rare reprieve from having to be a functional human in the world. You're physically strapped to a chair with a limited range of motion, thousands of feet off the ground, intensely stressful, but there's a freedom. Drinking on planes and in airports and giving others the freedom to do so is part of the social contract. I agree with that. You take off and you are relieved of personhood for that moment. That's not to say you can infringe on other people's well-being. But the smells and all that. But this woman likes to have a Woodford and orange juice. I don't know what that is. She says it's called a Kentucky Sunrise. She says sky time is my time. So I agree. I'm a one drink on a plane person. If I'm going to have one, it's one. And I usually don't. I love coffee on a plane, though. You know what it is? Because I used to have such bad panic attacks. It seems like I've really just come a long way where I'm like, yeah, I'm having coffee on a plane. I used to not be able to have coffee like 24 hours before I flew. I was so anxious. Oh, I'm yawning because I just bored myself with that story. Oh my God. So I'm having like an ADD attack. Like I'm like, oh my God, my apartment's so cute. All the decorations. I got to have people over. And then I start inviting people. I'm like, well, if I invite that person, I have to invite that person. And my place is small for like a huge party. Like 20 people is that's too many in my place. And I'm like, I got to do that and shoot, I guess 20 is actually fine, but I don't want to be loud, and then I'm going to just like, I really would rather have like a curated thing where like 2 nights a week, I have the perfect amount of people over. So it's like, I take 4 friends that I know like each other and we can enjoy my Christmas decorations and have cocktails at my house, and then a couple nights later, these other 3 people, but it's like, I have like some favorite people in my life that don't know each other. And it would be weird if I'm like, hey, do you 3 want to come over and get to know each other? I mean, I guess it would be fine. But at my age and with other things, like if everyone's just like, what are you fucking kidding? And a lot of women I know, I don't really know their boyfriends. Like I've never met their boyfriends because like we're not the best of friends, but we're like close in a way. And then it's like, well, they bring them to the Christmas party. And now I'm hosting all these couples and like, that's depressing. It's like, ugh. So I'm like, forget it. So I like sent out an email like, hey guys, what date works for you? Like the 8th, the 9th? Everyone's like, these dates. And then I start doing the paperless post. And then I just get like in a panic and I never hit send. And then I wrote everyone back. I'm like, sorry, I'm freaking out. I'm not going to have a party, but I'll see you soon. Such a freak. I am doing peel and stick wallpaper in my place because I'm a renter and I still think like how could that still not ruin the wall, but whatever. And I'm hiring a woman to put it up for me and I'm getting like different furniture in my bedroom and I've been waiting to do this for a long time, but all of that is taking place the day after this would-be party. I'm like, that's not happening. So I think it's just going to be a transition month for me where I just really need to redo this bedroom. It's going to be more of a black and white themed bedroom with some gold touches. Think more Rachel Zoe than Donald Trump decor. And then, yeah, I'm excited, but it's like weird little things stress me out. Like, I don't know what stresses me out. I don't, nothing stresses. It's like stupid shit. If I described it, you'd be like, oh my God. It's like these guys from 1-800 Got Junk are coming to take some of my furniture and they're going to donate it. But they have to, I want them to take this area rug that's under my bed. So they're going to have to lift the bed and get the rug out. Fine. But I have a new area rug coming. So I have to make sure the rug gets here the day before 800 junk guys come. And then when they're here, I'm going to have to say, hey, would you mind lifting up the bed so that I can put this rug under it? And they might be like, no, we're not. That's not what we do. But I'll be like, I'll tip extra. So it's like, I'm already stressing about that moment that's going to happen Saturday. It's the dumbest thing. These are the things I think about. Or this dresser that I got is like a half inch longer than the wall is, but I don't think it's going to totally bother me because it's in an area that. So I'm like, I can't wait to see if that bothers me. It's like, I'm trying, like today I did a friend's podcast. I'm like trying to focus and I'm like, my OCD ADD is just like, I wonder if that's going to bother me. I wonder if they're going to lift up the bed and let me put the rug under it. It's like, Jen, if someone else told me they had this problem, I go, don't fucking worry about it. But for some reason, I think I'm just generally anxious this month because of I don't know what my year next year is going to be, and I'm just anxious about some stuff that I have to make decisions about that I don't ever want to make decisions about, and my mind will not think of those things right now, so I focus on weird shit like I hope the thing half inch out of the wall doesn't bother me, and it's like okay, God bless that I have the luxury of these thoughts. So next week, well, I don't know when it comes out, but I tape it next Sunday. So in a few days, I'm going to be a guest on the Deck the Hallmark podcast. So God bless you to whoever direct messaged me on Instagram like a month and a half ago to tell me about this podcast. I'm obsessed. And I tweeted those guys before, like it was like a week before they got like famous. So they asked me to do their podcast. We scheduled it for a month and a half out. They told me what episode to watch and we're going to discuss it. But then like a week later, they were on Good Morning America. So like they're huge. Like they have more listeners than my podcast. Oh my God, can you imagine? And so I am just like obsessed with this podcast. The guys are just, I just want to hang out with them and be their best friends. They're all just like three nice married guys and they all like have worked in the, I think in the public school systems and they're all in South Carolina, but they're all woke dudes and they're sweet. And like, I just love hearing them talk about the Hallmark movies. And now when the movies are over, I'm going to be in two withdrawals from the movies and from the podcasts. So I'm so excited to tape it. I will obviously let you guys know when it comes out. I will be bragging to the world because to me, this is like the biggest deal ever. Because when I really love something, it's like the biggest deal ever. I want to give a shout out to Ashley at the store And Other Stories. Ooh. So there's this amazing store called And Other Stories. They have a website. It's like a Scandinavian, it's like a Swedish clothing store, but it's not like you would think, like basics. It's like velvets and sequins and sparkles, and I love it. And I did a photo shoot for them with Aparna, and it was about like female comedians like supporting each other. And it was like we wore their clothes and we did a photo shoot. We did, it was like a pretend show we did, and I don't know, but our pictures are going to be in the store in Beverly Hills. I feel like I look a little chumbawamba in some of the pictures, not thrilled with the angles, but whatever. But I went shopping at the store because I'd never been, and I had bought something online. I tried to return it in the store. And this woman was like, oh, I'm so sorry, we can't. I was like, oh, it's totally fine. She was very sweet. But then I was like, well, I'm just going to look around. And she started a dressing room for me. And I know she listens. I know she listened to the podcast, and I was like dying laughing because once she started the dressing room for me, like nobody else came around and like, can I help you take that to the dressing room? Which I love because I hate when 50 people are like, do you have a dressing room started? I'm like, yes, you know, so anyway, it was amazing. She was great. And she was like, I'm an iSeem funner. And it was like my favorite thing in the world. And I loved the clothes that I bought, but I went back today to return two of them. Cause once I got them home, they didn't quite work. So, but that wasn't her fault. I'm the one that picked the clothes. Anyway, I just love that store and I'm giving it a shout out and they don't pay me to say that. So there's that. Yep. I don't have any Thanksgiving stories. Like, it's pretty much it. I do a bit now about like Catholics suck at saying grace, and my family really proved it this year. I was like, do we say grace? My dad was like, nope. And then I was like, well, what do we say? And my mother was like, I'm thankful for, and I'm like, no, isn't it like a prayer? She's like, oh, I don't know. Like nobody knew what was happening. And my sister was like bringing her cat to the table, like while my mother was trying to do her version of a prayer. Like it was pandemonium, people, pandemonium. I didn't have 1 second to myself, which makes me cuckoo badoo-coo. So when I go home for Christmas, I'm staying in a hotel like 15 minutes away, which will make my family go insane. But as I always say, I used to stay in a hotel down the street when I was married. So I'm married to myself. Like I just can't be in a house with people all day long, all night long. Like I need a little me time. I need a little gym. It's also like freezing out. So like a lot of times I just like go on power walks or like I'm home for 5 days. Like I want to get up on a treadmill, bitch. So, you know, I like being in a hotel. I like not having to like, you know, use up all my sister's resources at her house. Like I'll just go to a hotel. They'll make the bed. They'll give me towels every day. Like, fuck it. Like, and I get a little like controlled quiet at night, you know, like I'll leave when it's time to go to bed. So I'm going to go to the hotel at 8 and like blow everyone off. It's like, okay, good night. I'm going to bed, getting in the car, going to the hotel, you know, and it's just so much easier. But this time at Thanksgiving, I didn't rent a car because I thought the weather was going to be bad and I was being kind of a spaz about the weather because I just don't like driving in the ice. And my family is not like in a city. They're like, it's like more country. So it's like, you know, those country roads, they so icy. Unlike the Hallmark movie, like my big heels, like my suitcase, like how do you live out here? Oh my God. I'm just like, you know, when you just see like someone fading, that's me. I couldn't even think of an example of something that fades. I was like, you know, when you see someone fading, that's me. Yeah, that's me fading. Great analogy. All right. I'm boring myself. I was probably a big cunt in this episode. Until next week, have fun.